Blog Talk Radio.
My name's Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode 134, How Technology Changes Work, being recorded live on Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. Quick announcement, quick message before we get started. As always, this episode of the HR Happy Hour is brought to you by Acquire. From succession planning to compensation management and workforce analytics, Acquire delivers the holistic workforce planning solutions you need to make wise decisions at every point in your organization. Learn how Acquire can help you capture the true wisdom within your organization. Visit Acquire.com. That's A-Q-U-I-R-E.com. Many thanks to our friends at Acquire for all the support they've given us over the years. So, wow, great to be back, HR Happy Hour Show. Great show tonight. We're going to be talking about technology and work and the workplace and HR and how technology impacts and changes HR. We have a super guest waiting in the wings to bring on in just a minute. It's February 2nd, Groundhog Day today, as a matter of fact. And that hit me as I was getting ready for the show about an hour ago, and I thought, I should have just replayed last week's show, right, on Groundhog Day. Wouldn't that have been the wise move? Just replay. Taking the night off and just phoned it in. I could have probably got away with that, too, but kidding aside, so we're here, we're great, it's great to be back on the show. Our call-in number, as always, 646-378-1086, if you want to get on board tonight. Definitely have time for calls, comments. I'm sure the topic tonight will raise some interest, raise some questions and comments as well, so I'd love for you to participate tonight by calling in. Of course, on Twitter, our back channel hashtag HR Happy Hour, of course, and we'll keep an eye on the HR Happy Hour hashtag tonight. Hello to everybody out there already tonight tweeting, and great to see you out there. Thanks Acquire, of course. I mentioned that. Other things I just wanted to mention before we get on with the show. Did anybody who's maybe the back channel folks can chime in if you were on board today, anybody catch the Fistful of Talent webinar this afternoon on recruiting on Facebook? I thought, you know, I know I'm an FOT guy. I'm a contributor there, so I'm a little biased, but I got to give props to Chris and Timmy. They really brought the pain today. A fantastic job on the webinar. Just loved it and really well received. So good job and props to Chris and Tim for that webinar. Another thing, our friends at Glassdoor, good friends of the show, and I'll be doing some work with them at SHRM coming up. Glassdoor had a really interesting announcement today related to Facebook as well, with some Facebook integration onto the Glassdoor.com website. So if you haven't read about it, although I'm not sure how you could have missed it because it was covered everywhere today, but maybe mosey on over to Glassdoor.com at some point tonight or over the weekend and check out that how cool that Facebook integration they built, where you can sort of not only see the reviews and the information about a company, but also see who you might be connected with on Facebook that can help you network your way into a company that you're interested in. So really cool, and props to the friends, our friends at Glassdoor for that today. What else? I found out today I'm going to be doing a webcast next month with one of my favorite, maybe my favorite, you know, quite frankly, my favorite HR person in the world, China Gorman, longtime friend of the show, frequent guest on the show. China and I are going to be doing a webcast with the really cool people at Achievers next month in March, so look for some information on that coming soon. And what else? Last announcement. Oh, ERE. ERE Spring coming up at the end of March. I found out recently I'll be back at ERE doing the HR Happy Hour live on the webcast from ERE in San Diego coming up at the end of March. So, you know, ERE is an awesome event, great group of people, and you might want to check that out, ere.net, and get yourself out to San Diego at the end of March. So I think that's it for announcement. Oh, and I learned this on Twitter right before the show. Frank Zupan is smarter than he looks. So fantastic to Frank. Good stuff. And Frank, you are smarter than you look, and I agree with that. So, all right, I think that's all the announcements I had for tonight. So let's get on with it. I'd like to welcome our guest to the HR Happy Hour show. Our guest tonight is Patrick Riley. Patrick is the Chief Executive Officer of Modern Survey. In addition, it's a human capital measurement firm, right? So in addition to co-founding Modern Survey and serving as the company's chief executive officer, Patrick has spent nearly two decades in the field of employee measurement. His expertise has been tapped by media organizations such as Talent Management Magazine, the Star Tribune, and National Public Radio. He's got over 20 years in human capital measurement. Also, Patrick informed me today, he's got a background in filmmaking and music, so maybe we'll talk a little bit about that tonight as well. But please welcome to the show our guest for tonight, Patrick Riley. Patrick, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's really great to be here. Looking forward to the show.
All right. Well, it's our pleasure to have you here. Coming to us from the great state of Minnesota, Minneapolis, longtime supporting city of the HR Happy Hour show. So we're pleased to have another guest from that great city with us tonight as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad to be able to represent the Twin Cities, and we're having some just completely amazing irrational weather here. I think it was maybe about 40 degrees today, something like that, and we have had on the record books now as being like the most mild winter we've ever had, which is both awesome and slightly disconcerting at the same time.
Yeah, hey Patrick, tell us a little bit about Modern Survey. For folks who might not be familiar with Modern Survey, just a little bit about Modern Survey, then we'll get into a little bit about what you guys do specifically. But tell us about Modern Survey.
Sure, my pleasure. Well, you correctly described us as a human capital measurement company. So ultimately what we do is we help our clients hire the right people, build an engaged and high-performing workplace, make sure that they retain key talent, maximize leadership. And then, so we give all the insights into that and put that into a nice managed state. And then we also provide a perspective into the clients and customers as well. That's been a kind of a growing part of our business, because ultimately we feel like that's the ultimate holy grail, is what I like to refer to as kind of this triangle, which is the way brand and employee and customer all work together as a system. So ultimately we want to be able to get at that, that understanding for our clients. So that ends up meaning we do a whole bunch of different kinds of measurement, everything from surveys, and that can be anything from like an employee engagement survey to an onboarding effectiveness survey, leadership development, all those different kinds of measurement. We'll do client satisfaction, customer satisfaction, those sorts of measurements as well. But that's really our bread and butter. That's the type of work I've been doing for years, and we specialize in doing that for a lot of Fortune 500 companies, so we're able to get into those kind of complex projects. But where it's going now is it's not just that process of surveying and measurement, right? It's how does that information provide insight into what's really going on at the organization, and that's where we've been. Our product suite and our product platform has been going over the last couple of years, and we've got some really exciting new product developments going on this year in that space.
Yeah, Patrick, thanks for that. It's interesting, I guess, from your perspective and the organization's perspective as a company that works with lots of different clients and generates lots of data, that's given you and the team there at Modern Survey a little bit of some maybe interesting insight that it's not easy to get, right, from working in your own individual organization or just not having that macro view and that macro perspective. So I think I'm right about that, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was some of the ideas around what we thought we'd talk about tonight, which is what you guys are seeing gleaned from some of the intelligence that you gathered from the work you do with customers, as well as your perceptions of the market from being in the space for a long time, where the market is going and how technology in particular is impacting the organization.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and you really put your finger on it. Sort of the headline news that we – Just to back up a little bit, we've been we do research every 6 months to look at the U.S. workforce, to kind of look at trends in terms of employee engagement and kind of where the headset is or the mindset is of your average worker. And we've seen some really disturbing trends over the last few years. Our most recent survey was in September of last year. And, you know, kind of the short story is that the U.S. workforce is increasingly disengaged, and they feel stuck. And we just have seen that trend just continue, you know, as we've been making our way, you know, out of the recession and out. It seems like things are getting better, but from the perspective of the U.S. workforce, you know, things are kind of grim. So that's one piece of information, and it's frustrating because we want to find that optimism, right? Now, the other piece of information that I continue to get as I talk to executives and is that there's a lot of optimism about 2012, and you know, we've been talking to many different clients that are planning on doing a lot of hiring this year, which is great. And from their perspective, they want to make sure that they're going to do it as well as possible, right? So if they're going to, you know, kind of ramp back up again and increase their workforce by, say, 30%, you know, how are they going to do that effectively? So it's kind of an interesting paradox, right? You've got a set of employees that really feel like there really are no sets, you know, there are very few options for them. They just kind of feel stuck. You know, we just continue to see that number go up and up. But then on the other side, you've got, you know, employers that are saying, well, you know, I think we're about ready to ramp up here again. We want to make sure that we're really prepared for it. We want to measure it and make sure it's going to happen effectively. So my hope is that, you know, that when we remeasure employee engagement, I think our next set of measurements happens in April, that we, you know, start to see, you know, this, you know, those trends start to really turn around and there starts to be a little bit more optimism. But it's just, yeah, it's really kind of a paradox and it's really kind of a dilemma.
Yeah. Patrick, let me just do a quick pause, reset. Let's just everyone relax out there in the back channel as well. Welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. It's so great to have you with us tonight. Our guest is Patrick Riley tonight from Modern Survey, and we're going to talk a little bit more about technology in particular and how it's changing the workplace. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Our back channel hashtag on Twitter, HR Happy Hour. We're keeping an eye on that, and hello to everyone out there tonight. So, Patrick, you know, we thought tonight we'd talk a little bit about technology as well, right, and how technology is impacting the workplace. And as part of the research that you're doing, the data that that Modern Survey collects from organizations, plus your own thoughts, you've got some really intriguing ideas around where technology sort of is, but more importantly, where it's going and how it's going to change the workplace. So I just maybe start with a really broad question, and you can kind of take it where it makes sense for you and where it makes the most helps us understand how technology is changing work. So let's talk about work itself and what your perception is of how work itself is really changing.
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, if you take a big step back, right? I mean, there's this, and we see more and more of this, which is, I mean, obviously we're seeing manufacturing and those parts of those kinds of industries, you know, kind of disappearing, or you know, it's unclear how they're going to come back in the U.S. But the knowledge economy, right, and the knowledge workers is sort of the biggest, you know, biggest to me, where I continue to see one of the biggest lifts to the economy, and also has the biggest potential. And it's in that knowledge economy, right, where we're seeing workers start to figure things out in different ways. And I think, you know, social networking, obviously, and the social platforms are what are really starting to give so many different options. I think it's really fascinating how we've been how we keep learning from a lot of these consumer products, right? Things like Facebook and LinkedIn, keep learning from them, and then we're obviously, you know, and we see value in them, and now we're starting to see them as potential tools. And you know, as you were talking earlier in the show, obviously there's a big value in terms of recruiting, you know, for that front end of how people kind of manage their careers and how they want to be understood in the workforce. But it also becomes a concept for how people can share information, how they can collaborate inside, you know, inside the workforce, how you can get goal setting in teams. Around ideas and find a lot of efficiencies and a lot of kind of lightweight, and I think it feels empowering to work in that kind of way, right? So that's exciting, and that's what continues to really open things up. So, for example, you know, here at Modern Survey, you know, we're a pretty high-tech outfit, and like over the last over the last 6 months or so, I mean, virtually our whole management team is now on iPads, you know, and it's just okay. It's amazing to see how that shifts so much. I mean, we're using, you know, Dropbox, we're using these ways of sharing information. Paper's almost disappearing. You know, we're working, you know, we're putting ideas on an iPad, we're wirelessly projecting that up onto a flat screen, we're able to, you know, send that image off to someone. There's just a, you know, using cloud and these sort of tools, it really opens up some really interesting ways to work.
Yeah, it's a really interesting sort of path to go down, Patrick, particularly in and around the tools themselves, whether they're, in your example, tablets and making use of cloud technologies. And sort of, and it gets to one of the comments we thought we'd catch tonight on the show about when it almost maybe a I don't know if prediction is the right word, Patrick, but like this idea that you know this paperless office, right, that we've heard about for I don't know forever, right? I think
forever.
When I first started working, we were going paperless, you know, once everybody had a computer, and that never really happened, but. It you do get the sense that it's if it is ever going to happen, we're much much closer to that kind of state than we ever were before. Patrick, I'd love for you to comment a little bit about we talked about social networking a little bit and tablets and mobile and just the sort of the virtualization of work. Do you get the sense that companies are sort of ready for that? And by that I mean that if the market for talent is such that the best people that they want for their jobs, the people that they're really trying to attract, are really making more demands, right? That whether it's virtual work or work with their own tools, they want to use their own iPhone versus the company-issued phone and whatnot. Do you get the sense, at least from your perspective, that organizations are really warming up to that, or is it still a bit of a tension between what say, the modern or the new workforce wants and what organizations are ready and willing to support?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's still a spectrum out there. Obviously, there's, you know, certain companies that are going to be slow to change. But I would say in general, I've seen it, and I really started to notice this last summer as I was meeting with executives and from just a variety of companies and starting to talk to them about their HR strategy, that they finally, you know, and finally realized it's like, wow, you know, one, you know, we like you said, from a please the employees perspective, you know, we're not going to be able to shut down Facebook and LinkedIn. We got to figure out how to just, you know, seize this and make it work for us as a platform, and you know, and you know, think about how we can use it internally. Think about how we can use it in terms of, you know, getting connected to the customer. That's where I always think it gets interesting, especially like in the retail businesses, et cetera, where there's, you know, there's that ability to for employees to almost connect directly with customers via social networking, et cetera.
Right.
And there's also, and this is where I think it gets really cool, which is when I can get the marketing person and the HR person in the room, you know, at the same time, and we start to have that conversation, right, kind of around employee and customer, and that's when it really starts to get intriguing, because these platforms really do give a whole new way to be able to, you know, one, to be able to, you know, have employees connect and interact, but also be able to connect back to the customer in ways that just weren't possible before, and it can be so efficient, and if it's done strategically, there can be really, really desirable outcomes with that. But it's a whole new way of thinking, and I would say that the executives that are progressive and managers that are progressive are definitely getting it. I've been seeing that trend accelerate. You know, like, for example, I just had a company in here a week or two ago, a pretty well-known retail brand based out of Twin Cities, and we were talking about their whole they're kind of looking at their whole talent management process right now and looking at a way to completely rebuild it. And they came to me and said, how can we do this just, you know, with just all cloud solutions? You know, is there a way to build this around, you know, LinkedIn or Facebook, kind of come at it completely differently than the more traditional approach? And I just think that's both exciting and obviously a little worrisome too, but pretty exciting. And I think that that's the kind of trend we're going to continue to see.
Yeah, Patrick, there's a couple really interesting things you touched on in that response that I want to circle back to. One of them, and I just think it's kind of cool and a little bit sort of refreshing for me on this show, is, you know, we tend to talk a lot on this show and we write about the folks who are in the HR and talent entrances. We tend to there's a lot of inward looking, right? We're talking about what we're doing, programs we might want to implement. We're talking about, you know, recruiting strategies, we're talking about talent management strategies, but we don't talk probably about the customers enough, right? The real customers, mm-hmm. not, you know, and I think it's kind of an interesting and I think important just to pull that out again from some of your comments that some really interesting things happen when you really start talking about the real customers and not just sort of internal things, right? And I think that's really really important to know. And then the second thing, which I think is really interesting as well, is this idea that, well, you know, organizations starting to think, and certainly forward-looking organizations, you know, probably, but starting to think about what can they do to sort of implement or execute talent management strategies that may not necessarily be sitting in the traditional systems and processes that they've always done, and maybe looking at things like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or other things as well. And that's fascinating as well. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about what the future might hold for those kinds of things as well. But the customer thing, I think, really interesting, and I think also important to know.
Completely agree with you on all counts. Yeah. And there's just so many new approaches, you know, to really be thinking about the way that exactly what you described, that connection relationship between the employee and the customer, and to understand it, to be able to measure more effectively. And it just happens so much. It just happens so differently now, you know, through that transparency of social networking.
Let me pause right there, Patrick. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bose. Our guest is Patrick Rowley, CEO of Modern Survey, modernsurvey.com, a human capital measurement company based out of the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm not from there, Patrick. I'm not sure if I've ever even been there other than the airport. Did the people get along okay? Do you throw things across? Is there a river? What's the climate in the Twin Cities for someone who doesn't know?
That's a really good question. Okay. There is a river that runs in between us. Well,
okay.
Kind of. It actually runs right through the middle of Minneapolis, and then this is kind of cool. You could actually get in a boat in Minneapolis, and
okay.
I think it's about 10 miles to get to downtown St. Paul. You go downriver, and then you would actually get to St. Paul. They're definitely somewhat competitive and very different culturally, which is fascinating. So, you know, St. Paul is, you know, feels a little bit more, if you're walking around St. Paul, feels to me a little bit more like Boston. You know, it's got
okay.
a little bit more old school, a bit more classic architecture. Things close a little bit earlier, a little bit more conservative, and which kind of makes sense historically because St. Paul was sort of had an earlier development, and, you know, a lot of the beautiful homes were built kind of in the late 1800s.
Okay.
Minneapolis is always kind of like the newer city. And you know, it feels a little bit more like, you know, I don't know, LA or Dallas or something like that. So it's got a much more progressive skyline. It's a lot more progressive thinking, a little
okay.
younger demographic. So each culture, it's convinced that they're the best. But,
right,
you know,
there's
definitely been rivalry, you know, going on for years. But it's really pretty cool, and it's bizarre. Like, people in St. Paul never come to Minneapolis, and people in Minneapolis never go to St. Paul. And
right,
like
they're separate. Yeah, they're 10 miles away, but it may as well be 100, right? Yeah, I've got to
exactly.
get out. I've got to. Yeah, it's one of my goals. I've got to spend a little more time out there, hopefully sometime soon. But thanks for that little diversion, Patrick, and giving us a little education about the Twin Cities for definitely because I didn't know much about it, so it's interesting to me as well. And again, our call-in number tonight, 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to come on board and just make a comment. Give your pitch for Minneapolis or St. Paul, or whatever you prefer, or just ask a question or make a comment. For any of the folks who are on hold right now listening to the show, any of you guys, just press 1 and we'll go to you straight away. And, of course, our back channel on Twitter, HR Happy Hour, of course, we'll keep an eye on that too. So, Patrick, you know, I felt, you know, there's a couple of big themes that, you know, in some of the research that you're doing, have done, and then that you're working on. You guys you've identified some big themes that, or trends maybe, that are sort of impacting work and are changing the way work is getting done and the way HR organizations need to sort of be engaged in that work. And I'll throw the first one out. You guys mentioned speed, right? Speed as a really big driver of change in the organization. I'd love for you to comment specifically about speed because we hear that a lot, right? You know, oh, everything's moving so fast, right? And we say that a lot, but then I guess I'll throw it out there and say, well, have we always been saying that? Like, did people sit around in 1965 and say, boy, things are moving so fast? I mean, is it sort of always been that way, or is it something maybe a little different about the pace of business and the pace of change and the need to react to it that maybe you think is even more acute than it used to be?
Well, that's a really great question, and it's funny you mentioned 1965 because I always start this conversation around 1964 when I talk about speed.
Okay.
In my opinion, I mean, obviously, if we look through the evolution of, you know, humanity and the growth of industry, et cetera. I mean, there's been, you know, ongoing speed throughout time. But here's the thing. In 1964 is when we basically get our first computer chip, or the sort of the beginning of the idea of the, you know, being able to process information. And there was a computer scientist whose name was, I think it was Gordon Moore. And he predicted
Gordon
in 1964.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's Moore's Law. And he predicted in 1964. And you may have heard this. Yeah, exactly. Moore's Law. So basically said, I predicted for, you know, every 2 years that, you know, the amount of transistors that we can put on a chip, I think is what it was, would increase by a factor of 2 every 2 years. And roughly that meant that sort of the speed of processing would increase roughly every 2 years. And he said, I predict this is going to continue on until 1974. And it did. But then it kept continuing on. And it's been going at roughly that rate, you know, right up till now. And it's and the predictions are from scientists still that we'll continue to be at that kind of rate until about, you know, 2015 or 2016. And then I guess at that point, the design of chips becomes like subatomic or something, or atomic, you know, meaning it's like nano kinds of engineering
right.
at that point. So there is a, you know, there's a true engineering, you know, drive behind this. And it's been that, and if you think about that curve, it's logarithmic too. And I think, so that's why I think it feels like every 2 years, you know, we just continue to go, you know, this increasing factor of speed and development. And you know, I always use this this real simple way to think about it, you know, think back 5 years, you know, and think currently to where we are now, and then think 5 years ahead and realize that, you know, that it'll be, that the rate of change between now and 5 years from now will be at least a factor or two faster than it was for the previous 5 years, right? So it's just that reminder that nothing is slowing down, and the driver behind that, I mean, like ultimately, is the speed of computing. You know, it's the fact that we can put these incredible chips, you know, in a tablet or a mobile phone, which enables this bizarre, incredible processing in our hands that was just unthinkable 5 years ago. But again, it's that, you know, that speed of processing, it really directly drives that.
Yeah, Patrick, one of the interesting comments
I
saw just pop up.
It's real. Speed is real.
Yeah, and here's another comment related to speed that came up on the back channel on Twitter that I think is really interesting as well to bring up is that the speed with which information is transmitted, or perhaps even that it's just available in real time, right? And that's that whole, you know, news breaks online before it ever, you know, faster than ever before. And it's hard, you know, and I swear I hate those commercials. And maybe you've seen them, I don't know. And folks who are listening to the show have seen these recent batch of smartphone commercials, these I think they're AT&T, you know, I hate to knock them because I used to work for AT&T years ago, but, you know, they're that's so tech, and the people sitting around staring at their phones like a bunch of jerks, right? Oh, that's so 10 seconds ago. That, you know, you know what I'm talking
right,
about,
right.
Patrick? Maybe you've seen this. But even though they're annoying and they sort of remind – maybe I'm annoyed by them because it reminds me of how stupid I look when I'm – instead of talking to people, I'm staring at my phone, which is probably fairly common. but that's the whole point of those commercials, as stupid as they are, is that it's in their, and at least one of them is set in a real workplace environment, right? And it's all about this, the workplace news about somebody leaving, somebody getting promoted, and the party and all this is happening instantly. It's instantaneous. And so, you know, I mean, I suspect you're right. I sort of pitched it out there like, well, you know, we always like to look back and say, oh, you know, this is the most dynamic era, you know, we've ever lived in. We've been saying that for 40 years, but I think you're probably right. I think it's more true now than it used to be before, and maybe the pace of information exchange has contributed to that as well.
Yes, you're right, and it's just, and that's the way it feels now, because we kind of hit this, at some point we hit this threshold where, you're right, the amount of information that we're just have access to, and there's just this, you know, this barrage of this information that is just coming to us, just starts at some point as a human being, you know, it's like, okay, enough already, way too much. You know, so there was this desire for instant access to information for so long, but it's almost like it's got to a point where we've kind of gone past to the desired amount, you know.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I wonder if one of the challenges that organizations are going to face is sort of that management of that information, like whether they rely on technology or they rely on sort of the culture, the processes. Like, how do we adapt and manage in a world where it's much more difficult to I don't know, control, if that's the right word, control information and control, or at least understand the pace and the method at which information gets transmitted in the organization too. And that sort of leads into our maybe one of the second big drivers or themes that we wanted to talk about on the show, which was transparency, right? And so, right, if information is sort of everywhere and everyone's networked together, whether it's inside the organization or outside or in that ecosystem, right, that surrounds the organization. I mean, that's got to be pretty challenging for the organization and the HR professional today. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about just your thoughts about how transparency, you know, has changed and the pressure it puts on organizations and even HR professionals as well.
Sure, absolutely. You know, this has been obviously such a hot area of many conversations for many HR professionals over the last few years. And I think, you know, when Facebook first started to hit, right, everyone was like, wow, this is really interesting and novel, but, you know, it's not an HR tool, or we're just going to lock this thing out, we're just going to avoid it. But, you know, then there's, you know, what is there, 850 million people now on Facebook. It's not going anywhere. And at some point, you know, most organizations a couple years ago have just realized that, you know, there's no way they're going to be able to cut down on that transparency. It's going to be there, and they're going to have to figure out how to work with it. So it's, you know, it's really a fundamental shift in how HR needs to think about these, you know, these, like, well, it, yeah, it's the way they think about the way that they can, you know, see employees, and the way employees can see each other if they're friends, or the way that, you know, they can use these transparency methods in order to see potential candidates, or, you know, if you're kind of get a glimpse at some point of, oh, wow, I'm seeing through LinkedIn that maybe, you know, my star product manager, you know, might be out there looking for a job, right? So it's just this whole idea of transparency really changes things. And it's not going anywhere. And it's just a whole new way of thinking. So it's, you know, both a challenge and an opportunity. And I think that, you know, most organizations are just trying to figure out how to turn this thing around and make it work for them. It's really interesting on the customer side, and that's why I always enjoy working with the folks in the marketing department, because they, you know, think about things a little bit differently, and I always feel
right.
Like we get some learnings from there, which we can share back with HR and vice versa. So one of the things we've recently done for a couple of our customers, which I think is really cool, is when a customer completes a online survey about their satisfaction with a service or product, et cetera. If their scores get, you know, are sort of, you know, on the higher side, so to speak, you know, and a lot of times I think we use a 10-point scale typically with satisfaction with customers. So let's say if there's six questions and the majority of the average of those questions is, you know, above 8 or above 9 or something like that. After they submit the responses, we can then encourage that, you know, happy customer to be able to share their experience with their Facebook friends, right? So if they, you know, had a really, you know, if they had a great, you know, shirt at the Gap, they bought a great shirt at the Gap, and they had a good experience there, they, you know, then say, you know, I just had a great experience at the Gap and just got this great shirt, and share it with their whole Facebook network, which then
right.
becomes lead generation for, you know, and free marketing, basically, you know, for all those other folks. So it's really a cool way to think about how to be able to kind of take advantage of transparency in that case, right? So saying, okay, someone completed this survey, looks like they're pretty happy, so we're going to take a risk here, but we're going to let them, you know, say something about us, or encourage them to say something about us to all their Facebook friends. So if you think of that sort of approach on the HR side, you know, meaning, you know, how can you use the transparency in a good way, or a strategic way, to get, you know, employees talking about culture, sharing it the right way, which can then, you know, can help with recruiting, can help with retention, can help with a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mentioned
yeah,
at
so
the top. Patrick, I mentioned at the top of the show, and there's running through my announcements that I'm going to be doing a webinar with China Gorman for a company called the Achievers. And one of the things Achievers does that's really cool, and I don't know if they're the only one, but the one I know of, is they're sort of a recognition, kind of employee reward recognition, you know, get kudos
yep.
from your colleagues, get points, trade them in for things, right, type of thing. But one of the cool things about that platform is there's like a button, right, on all of those accolades. If I say, well, Patrick, great job on the project, thanks so much for helping me, and I send you that message, there's a button for you to push that out to your LinkedIn network or your Facebook network externally, right, to share that information about how – and the idea is, right, that helps to build goodwill, builds the brand a little bit, sort of people get engaged, say, wow, that's a really cool place to work, right, things like that. And I think, you know – It's early days for that kind of thing, I think, on the sort of internal transaction and sort of communication side. But I do think it's coming. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you just described is a great example of how that can work. Yeah, we're definitely, you know, continuing to learn a lot, right, as we watch things like Yammer and, you know, watch some of these internal systems and, you know, seeing how, you know, how a company can try and intentionally get, you know, that transparency and that social network platform to work for employees and for managers. And,
yeah.
you know, I think there's going to be this interesting push and pull over the next few years, which is, you know, what HR, you know, thinks that employees should be using. And then there's going to be what employees and managers over time are starting to demand to use, you know, so it's going to be this, you know, interesting kind of push and pull. And then you've got IT, and, you know, if HR isn't checking with IT regularly, they need to, because, you know, IT may have a whole bunch of different ideas up their sleeve about, you know, trying to give some, you know, some new, for example, phasing out email or whatever it is, you know, making, because that really can fundamentally change the way people connect and work, and can have a huge effect on things like employee engagement, performance, and you know, et cetera.
Yeah, Patrick, and you mentioned email, and I want to come back to email because in sort of the last part of the show, I want to touch upon, you shared with me sort of five big kind of predictions or ideas about how work will change and how technology will change work in the next 5 years. Email's related to one of them, so we'll run through them all real quick towards the end of the show, at least, so that we can at least comment on them, because I think all five of them are kind of interesting, and the email one in particular. So. Quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. Our guest tonight is Patrick Riley, CEO of Modern Survey. We're talking about the changing nature of work, how technology is impacting work. We'd love for you to join us tonight as well. Two ways you can get into the conversation tonight. One is to call in, of course, 646-378-1086. Press 1 after you're connected. We'll bring you right on board. For any of the folks who are hanging out on hold, and there's a bunch of you, so thanks for that. And if you guys want to get on board tonight, just press 1. As well as the back channel on Twitter, we'll keep an eye on that. Our hashtag, of course, HR Happy Hour, and we're keeping an eye on that. And many thanks to all the folks who are out there listening and tweeting tonight. I hope you guys are having a great Thursday night. So Patrick, yeah, so the last theme before we sort of get on to the five sort of predictions, which I think are really cool, but the last thing we talked about was integration. And so, you know, the idea of, you know, the pace of business is changing. Technology is advancing at a more rapid pace than it ever was before. There's this expectation and even a quasi-demand of more openness, more information sharing, more sort of transparency. But that sort of brings into some questions of, you know, and maybe some problems for the HR professional and for the organization about integration. So how do they make sense of all these disparate systems, these data sources, and maybe on the IT perspective, these disparate tools or devices that people want to use? I mean, I'd love for you to comment a little bit about what you're seeing with regards to what maybe savvy organizations can do, or at least start thinking about doing to help make sense of all this rapidly changing, moving, quickly, you know, growing and shifting technology landscape.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, and yeah, this is, I mean, what you just described really is where the rubber meets the road now, which is, what to do. And integration really is that space that so many HR technologists are thinking about now, trying to figure out how to build a vision for the future. And like you said, how to make really good decisions with all these options that are out there. And, you know, it's I think at a place to start is, you know, one, as you're looking at the systems and looking at the options, one really important thing is to make sure that if you're going to bring something in, that it's, you know, it's a platform and not a product. We talk about that a lot. And, you know, platforms is something that you can continue to build on, you know, in the months and the years ahead. It's, you know, it's built out in a way that it can integrate with other systems, you know. So if you want to make a change at some point, you have that kind of flexibility. Good platforms have APIs, which is the way, you know, the different platforms can work with each other and push and pull information. So it's really important to, you know, if you're not asking those kind of questions as you're looking for options, to make sure you're doing that, because that's really how this, you know, the whole kind of cloud promise works. It's getting all these things, you know, to fit together. And that way, also, if you get a bad apple downstream with your, you know, your, you know, let's just say it's like the analytics component of, you know, the thing that's absorbing the information and bringing it back into a meaningful way back to HR. If that's, you know, if you want to have a better option downstream, if, you know, if you've built it right, you can swap that out for another vendor or another option without it being, you know, a huge undertaking to be able to do that. But ultimately, to be successful with this, you know, it's never the same for any two organizations, and that's the one thing I can definitely promise all the listeners tonight, you know. And it's got to start that strategy piece first, which is, you know, what are we, you know, it's this, you know, this obvious things, but where are we going, and what are the most important things that we need to do, and what's current state, and where are we trying to get to? And then, you know, that's the starting point. And then science is the next one in terms of a focus. And this is really important. And I've actually seen a couple of tweets pop through too that have addressed this, which is, we've got all this information, you know, it's and and a lot of information isn't necessarily a good thing. So we need to figure out, you know, the quality of all these different measures and all these different things you're doing. So you want to make sure that you're using good scientific principles to make sure that you're getting, you know, just the right amount of information distributed to the right people, and mainly be a few key measures, because those are the right things to act on and to focus on. You know, and then with the, with that strategy work and that science work, and then looking at those technology options, you know, ensuring that you've got the flexibility that you need, that you can integrate effectively with other systems, you know, then you're in a good position to start making those decisions about what to do. But you've, you know, you really got to go through that process to get to the right place.
Yeah, Patrick, great points. Just a quick couple quick things on that. Unrelated, looks like Bulls 36, Knicks 33, second quarter, if anybody's interested in that. I'm a huge Knicks fan, Patrick, so I had to throw that in, and I'm halfway monitoring the Knick game on a side screen here at HR Happy Hour HQ, and it's been a brutal early season for my Knicks, but they're hanging in there, at least with the Bulls tonight. You know, it's an interesting thing, Patrick, because we see that a lot, you know, in the work that we do, especially as technologists, right, with organizations. And it's I think that the tendency can be to think it's going to be much easier than it eventually proves out being to tie things together and to sort of make, you know, to get that right level of sort of sense-making across different platforms. It's sadly much tougher, right, in reality than you'd expect it to be. And I definitely think you're right. It's going to be a problem for organizations as more and more technologies introduce themselves inside the organization, because they're just being brought in, right? They're not coming in through that centralized IT or procurement process. They're just coming in because employees are bringing them in. I think that's definitely a big challenge going forward.
Absolutely.
Patrick, the last thing I want to do, because it's kind of fun and I think they're really cool and interesting, is one of the things we thought we'd talk about tonight is sort of five changes that you sent these over to me earlier in the week, these five sort of technology changes that will impact the way of work. You know, maybe not today or tomorrow, but, you know, maybe in the next 2 years, 5 years, wherever it's going to be. And they're really cool. And, I thought maybe we'll run through the list, Patrick, and you can comment a little bit about them, and we can sort of, you know, talk about them a little bit and see what folks think. Does that sound reasonable for the last part of the show?
Sure, love to.
Great. So here's the first one. So, and we've touched on this a little bit today, but I'll go ahead and read the whole thing. Number one, leading social network providers like LinkedIn, Google, Facebook, et cetera, they will become a leading choice for almost the system of record when building HR or HR cloud technology systems. So within 5 years. So talk a little bit about the importance to the organization of these really public platforms. I'd love for you to comment on where you see that going.
Sure, absolutely. You know, and I think the timing is great with this, right? You know, everything we've been hearing about the Facebook IPO,
right,
and, you know, why the value is so high, et cetera. And here's the way I see this, and I mention this often, and it's when I'm talking with folks, and it really is provocative, but it really is a good way to think about where we are and where we're going. So, you know, let's just talk about LinkedIn. I always think that's an easiest example. So we've got, you know, I forget what they're up to, somewhere around 150 million or something users on that platform now. And, you know, typically when I'm in a room of, you know, 100 people, if I'm doing a presentation, I say, is there anyone in the room who's not on LinkedIn? Typically, you know, almost, you know, 9 times out of 10, no hands go up.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning everyone's on this platform, right? And we're already starting to use it and seeing the value, obviously, in hiring and, you know, doing all the recruiting and sourcing, right? Because it's a way to be able to see people. It's very effective. You know, this is, you know, it's obviously threatening the recruiting business, because it's easier and easier for HR to just, you know, directly find ways to be able to find key talent. And so that's one part of it. Then you've got this other phenomena, and this is what I think is interesting, is it's this this increasing shift in what I call your personal brand or your career brand, you know, in cyberspace, meaning that increasingly if you're a professional or if you're an employee in an organization, you're managing that personal brand in cyberspace. And a lot of people are doing that on LinkedIn right now, and obviously some are doing it on Facebook and using things like Branch Out, et cetera. It's similar,
right?
But the idea is you're managing that. So then you play this out over time, right? You've got a company that is trying to do all of its sourcing and recruiting, and they're able to use LinkedIn. You know, 99.99% of the people looking for jobs or looking for jobs at the organization are probably coming, you know, are on LinkedIn. That's part one. And then we've got, you know, we've got LinkedIn with all their open APIs, again, APIs being the way that they can people can build onto their platform, in a position where they could start building bringing other cloud partners in to manage something like compensation or manage something like benefits or manage something like employee measurement, and they could just plug right into that platform. So in other words, you've got existing employees and managers already on the LinkedIn platform. So instead of using, some more traditional platform, they're on it. And that is that kind of system of record. And as you're bringing people in, they just naturally flow right on. The onboarding process is much more efficient. So it just brings a ton of efficiencies to the organization. And I think if it goes that way, it'll be employees and managers are going to say, this is the way I want it. It's easier.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's some logic to there, no doubt, Patrick, right? Why rebuild all this? Why rebuild all this talent information, this career information, every day LinkedIn adds something new, right, to that talent profile, whether it's skills or recommendations or, all the things that they have already, right? An argument could be made for why rebuild all that? Why try to replicate all that inside my four walls when it's all out there, right? And primarily, right? Selling point to employees. There's more. Why does LinkedIn have better information about employees than most internal talent systems do, right? It's because employees see the value in having full information on LinkedIn, I think, right? I mean, there's a win-win for them, right? And it's hard to replicate that value sometimes inside the organization, right? So I think that's an interesting. Definitely an interesting take on it, and I wouldn't really disagree with a lot of it. We're going to run out of time like I always do in the show, so I want to try to move into the next few because we just have about 14 or so minutes left in the show. Let's go to sort of prediction number two. And this one's, I think I buy this one. It says, within 5 years, over 80% of managers and employees will interface with all company systems either through tablets or smartphones or other internet appliances rather than just the traditional browser or other methods. The mobile, obviously, tablets, but, that's it. That's how we're going to work, and we're going to forget about sitting down and logging into a terminal, more or less within 5 years.
That's definitely my prediction. And it's so cool to see the way – now that we're really a couple of years into mobile and seeing the way, software is just being written in a completely different way now, which is just so much more efficient, and it's so much more kind of pushing, the things that you need to do or the information that you need to, either access or be able to feedback. It just, we're finding so many really cool ways to be able to do that much more effectively through mobile and, through tablets. I just think it's a very reasonable expectation. I think that's the way it's going to work. Yeah, the idea of kind of going to a browser, logging in, finding the things you need to do, clicking through, that's going to seem really old-fashioned. It's going to be much more like you hit your tablet, you go into the portal, here's the three things that you need to do, and here's the key information that you need.
Right. Patrick, I think, the spirit of that, I definitely would agree with. Hopefully we'll see that kind of that uptake in a lot of the systems that folks have to use. To me, it's almost user-friendliness, too. I mean, it's just, and that's a whole other story for another day, right, that just how difficult it is to navigate lots of systems you have to use at work versus how easy it is to do the things you want to do, in your social life or at home or on your tablet. So, maybe that one's not so controversial, but I'm going to go to number three, Patrick, which I think is interesting, and I'd love for you to comment on this, where you're coming from. It's a short and sweet one. Now, again, this is a technology change which will sort of change the way we work within 5 years. And here it is. I'll just read it straight up. Email will be nearly dead. Now, nearly is sort of a little bit of an open word. So what do you think is going to happen to email in the next 5 years? And, we're talking corporate now. We're talking not personal use, but,
Right.
Why do you think email will be nearly dead?
I think the way we work is going to change so significantly. And, we're learning this so quickly through social. And it's that the way we exchange information is going to be built more around a platform, more around ideas and threads and ideas, and much less around this more, what's going to feel like old-fashioned idea where you type something up and you think about it for a long time and you send it off to someone. Now, I think email will still be used for more involved, thought, just put it this way, something you take some time to really write and draft, and it has, or maybe when it needs to have a little bit more formality, et cetera, or But I think that the way we exchange information, particularly inside an organization, is really going to fundamentally shift for the reasons that you were just saying, which is the way we work through, you know, through mobile and tablets. You know, it's just, it's really just a different way of connecting. And when I think of how, I mean, you probably have this same experience too, Steve. Like, you run into a friend and they say, "I'll Facebook you that." You know, I mean, it's just so right. It's just so bizarre to hear that. And but you know, that's the way people are going to be exchanging information. And email is going to feel, you know, kind of like a fax machine pretty soon.
it could be right. I mean, I do think there's some element of there'll be some pressure anyway. I'll say it this way: there'll definitely be some pressure, sort of as the demographics of the side of the organization changes, right? There's definitely this perception that whether it's social networking, Facebook, or texting, quite frankly, probably more prevalent than anything else. And it's funny that we talk all the time about Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter even, but you know, texting kind of drops off. But every so often you'll see like a report or a study that shows just the ridiculous amount of text. Right, that teenagers and young adults send to each other. It's astronomical, right? And we don't probably think about that as much in terms of the context of the workplace and workplace systems as maybe we ought to. But I for one would be happy to see email at least take less of a significant factor in sort of workplace communication, not just communication really, because email's great for communicating, right? It's super. I can email anybody in the world who's got an email address right now. It doesn't matter what kind of email they're using. As long as I know their address, right, I can send a message. They will get it. They'll be able to understand it. They know how to reply to it. Everybody knows how to use it. Pretty much everybody has it. It's solved that problem of interoperability, right? There's no API needed. It's really great for those kinds of things. But what it's terrible at for is that sort of ongoing collaboration to create something, to build something, to really have a meaningful collaboration amongst a group where it's horrible at that, but that's what we use it for primarily as well. So I do think that email sort of moving – Maybe sort of not dying, because I think it's probably crazy to think it's going to die. But I think let's use email for what it's good at only, and not use it for what it's not good at. Let's hope for that.
And that's probably ultimately the best way to think about it. And you know, I really think it's going to come down to this, which is what you mentioned. And you know, we're used to thinking about people's email addresses when we want to talk to them. But I think it's really going to shift to your social media, you know, node, which might be your Twitter handle or whatever. I mean, that's how things are going to be. It's going to be built more around that, which is kind of a completely different shift versus, you know, email, which is, you know, just a much different idea.
Right. Let's talk about the last couple of things before we wind up the show, Patrick. And again, I'm with Patrick Riley, CEO of Modern Survey. You can learn more about Modern Survey at modernsurvey.com. We're talking about how technology is changing work and some of the big trends and some of the predictions around technology in the workplace in the next few years. We're up to number four, and we have just five we wanted to touch on. But number four is cool. We touched on a little bit, but let's talk about it again real quick. Number four is the computer printer business will be in a crisis due to lack of demand for printers. And Patrick, I'm with you on this. I do not own a printer. I work out of my home primarily. I travel some, but I do not have a printer here, and I don't print anything. So I'm with you on this. I'd love for you to talk about printers and paper just disappearing, you know, from our psyche at work.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all want it. And I think, you know, I really think it's this. I think tablets finally solve this for us, you know. And it's that we can have that tablet with us and we can get an information that feels like paper and it's on demand and we can bring it into a room and we can lay it down. I mean, meaning we can lay the tablet down and read it and we can share it with somebody. And it'll just ultimately, the idea of printing paper is just going to seem, you know, so whatever, 2008. And you know, it's expensive too, those inkjet printers, you know. It's just, wow. You know, it's just, and what a waste. And it's just, and it, but even beyond that, I think it's just going to feel more crisp. It's going to feel more clean. It's going to feel more efficient, and it's going to make it easier to find the things you need, you know, instead of having to track down a printout or whatever. It's there.
Yeah.
So watch out, printing companies.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that too. It does seem like the times when you do have to print something, it's like, oh my God, I would have to print that. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you can go all the way back to the classic, you know, Office Space stuff, right, where the guys were out there smashing up the printer in the field because it was, you know, it was the bane of their existence. But it's kind of true. It still is, man. Printing stuff is horrible. And, I mean, so and it's funny that, you know, we were like everybody's really quick. We'll laugh at the fax machine, right? It's pretty easy to say, oh, you know, somebody asked you to fax something. Ha ha ha! How antiquated that is, right? But it wasn't that long ago. That was like the coolest thing ever, right? That you could take a sheet of paper and put it in a machine, type in a phone number, and boom, somebody on the other end, wherever they were, had that same piece of paper. It was a miracle, right? It was unbelievable. And now it's a joke. And I think that emails. We talked about email a second ago and printing. They're definitely hanging on, but. Why couldn't they sort of go the way of the facts as well, right? I mean, it makes some sense. So, we just have a couple of minutes left in the HR Happy Hour show with Patrick Riley from Modern Survey. The last prediction is a little more general, but I think an interesting one as well, and maybe we can comment on it a little more broadly as well, but just virtual working. We talked about it a little bit in the top of the show, but, I mean, you talk about virtual working being just more pervasive and more common. I'd love for you to comment on, so 5 years from now, what sort of the more, normal job will look like in terms of, or the organizations, a better way to phrase it, how organizations are going to embrace virtual working, maybe more than they have now. I'd love for you to speculate on where that's going.
Sure. I mean, I think there's sort of two ways to look at it. I mean, one is the tools that are going to be accessible. I mean, they're already accessible, and they'll keep evolving. So it's all the things we've been talking about, obviously, easy ways to be able to share information and it's just that access to information can happen anywhere in the world, and you can get on your, on your tablet or whatever, you can get to a file. It doesn't really matter where you are. You can get to it. But those other tools that are so evolved now, things like, video conferencing, et cetera. I mean, we do this all the time now. You just pull some up, if you have an iPad and someone's not here, we just pull them up, via Skype, and I just flip my iPad up on the table, and there they are, and we're able to bring that person into the conversation. And, and video is just such a good way to be able to work and be able to see each other. And, teams can still work pretty effectively, with video and versus, flying around and moving around. So with those advancements, it just opens up more possibilities for people to be in different places. There's less of some of those issues that we talk about now, which is, it's just always better when the person's here because we just don't have that sense of connection. If they're working elsewhere, I just think that really, really starts to change that. And the other one is this, that, and I think this is going to be driven more from the consumer side, especially with the increasing number of knowledge workers, which is they're going to want to work that way, and they're going to get used to working that way. And I know we're running out of time. A really short example. I was just talking to a friend of mine here in Twin Cities, because we're trying to hire a bunch of rock star front end developers. We're building a bunch of new cool stuff, and they're so hard to find because they're all they're all working and all the talented ones.
Sure.
And she said, there's this one guy that I know. There's like three or four people have been using for projects. He's actually spending the next year traveling Central America and South America, with his girlfriend, But he's got all of his equipment. And he just works, and he's so talented, and he's supporting multiple people. So, again, if the talent's great, you could be, you can be able to use these tools to be able to, work virtually, and this is the other phenomenon, work for multiple companies or multiple entities because you can. And I think as we continue to look for key talent to be able to, or sharpshooters to come in and do certain things, that virtual working and the way to be able to do that efficiently really starts to change. So there's sort of two sides to it.
Yeah, Patrick, that's a great example, and I've had a project experience like that, very similar as well. We had a guy who I think he was in a band, right? I think that was his sort of day job. But so he traveled around touring in his van with his bandmates. But by night he was some kind of database administrator, right? And he did a lot of really cool things for us, project basis, and it worked, right? Because mainly because the guy was really talented, but also because the organization was willing to be flexible enough to sort of embrace that form of work and focus on the job that needed to be done, rather than sort of the style or the mechanisms at which he was going to get his work done. So great, great point. Hey, Patrick, man, super time talking to you tonight. We're about out of time. Real quick, to learn more about what you're up to, Modern Survey, where should people go? ModernSurvey.com. Anything else you'd like to mention tonight before we sign off?
I think that's, if you want to find out more about who we are and what we do, that's definitely the best way to find us, ModernSurvey.com. My Twitter handle is Patrick T. Riley. So feel free to follow me. Those are probably the two best ways.
All right. Well, Patrick, thank you so much. Great show tonight. Flew by like it always does when we're having a great conversation. ModernSurvey.com, Patrick T. Riley on Twitter. Patrick, thanks so much. When I get out to Minneapolis, St. Paul, I'll look you up and you can give me the tour, all right? That sounds great.
Awesome. Look forward to it, and thanks again for a great show.
No, my pleasure. Lastly, many thanks to our friends at Acquire. Tonight's episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Wisdom 2012, a premier workforce planning and analytics conference held May 6th through 8th this year in Dallas, Texas. Wisdom 2012 is 3 days, 2 conferences, and 1 single unified source of knowledge to get the most from your workforce planning. If you sign up before March 16th, you'll receive a 25% early bird discount and see the full agenda and register today at acquireinc.com/wisdom2012. Many thanks to our friends at Acquire. Thanks, everybody, for listening tonight. We'll see you next time on the HR Happy Hour Show. Good night, everyone. Thank you. If anybody left lingering, say hello on after show.
Am I the only one, Steve?
There's a few other folks on the line. I'm not sure if anyone's going to talk. Paul, how are you?
Good.
Good stuff. As a reminder, all the lines are open, so if you've been on hold, your line is open. Anything you say on the after show is not streamed live on the web, but does make the recorded archive, so be warned of that. So,
Steve, Paul.
Brian, hey, how are you?
What's up?
Hey, Brian.
What's up, buddy?
Living the effing dream.
Haven't heard from you in ages, man. How are you?
Dude, ever since you went big time and you don't call, you don't write.
Hey, I'm doing drive-through HR. I'm unbooked, man. I'm back.
Nah, I'm just kidding you.
I'm on a
Paul, when are you booked? I got Steve. I got him right in front of me. When are you on?
April 4th.
Sweet.
So, Steve, this is going to sound dumb, but what was the topic tonight?
It was meant to be sort of how technology is impacting work. It was a very open, generic kind of topic, you know, trends in technology impacting work.
Okay. I had a little trouble figuring out what was going on. I don't know if that's because I was
it doesn't matter.
Tweeting all my Groundhog Day quotes or what, but
that's absolutely fine. That's probably where we should have focused on, quite frankly. Actually, it's killing me, man. I've told you this, Paul. We've had a conversation about this. It's been, you know, Brian, you appreciate this. It's so tough to keep grinding these out. It really is. And, you know, I mean, after a while, right, it's like, what else are we going to do, right, on the show? There's a limit to some my capacity to support the show sometimes.
No, I'm with you, brother.
Only so many things you can do with flour, sugar, and water.
Yeah, but it was good. Patrick was really good, man. Email's dead. I'm for that, man.
But you see the tweet stream, and I disagree just because, you know, radio's not dead, ham radio's not dead. You know, technology may get repurposed, but it doesn't go away.
Yeah, I mean, it's not dead. It definitely is a hindrance, though. I mean, we've seen this. I know there's projects
I've worked on
and still working on that. If we could just figure out a better way to connect, collaborate, share, work on a document, whatever it is, project plan, and just get it out of the email stream.
We've had that with SharePoint for, 7-10 years now?
I know, but
Lotus Notes was back in the early 90s.
Yeah, I know, but it's so easy to revert back to that easiest common denominator, right? It's so easy to email. That's kind of why I said, well, email's so easy. I can email anybody in the world. It doesn't matter what system they use. I know
right.
how to email. They know how to answer me. It's done, right?
Well, I guess
that's a problem. Yeah.
And that's why it's taken as long as it has for the fax machine to go away even, you know, and it's still not dead. But, you know, you said it wasn't that long ago. Crazy. Steve, it's been 30, 40 years. Right. You think about it, you know, the 60s, fax machines, we used to tell us overseas.
I don't really know. I mean, I've always known a world that had fax, so wasn't, you know.
No, I remember working
true.
When
that
we had telexes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was before faxes, but
yeah,
I mean, it's a generational, you have to get a whole generation out of the workforce before that email will go away. In other words, as long as there's boomers and Xers that kind of use email as part of their workload, it's never going to go away. You've got to get rid of that those two whole generations. That's my prediction. But
plus, you're going to have Google that's going to divest their Gmail portfolio.
I guess if companies get smaller, you know, and you get more, because it's easy for the, you know, Patrick talked about how they're doing a lot of things with their iPads and the cloud and Dropbox, you know, and that's a pretty viable approach for smaller companies. And it's only just starting to get into the larger organizations, right, where you can, like, you know, I've just seen some deals recently, like some big Google. What was that big Google Apps deal, that Google Mail deal that just got announced a little while? Was it the GE or GM or one of those really big?
Oh, no, there was a European company.
Yeah.
It might have been German.
Bank maybe or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was a professional services company of some sort. But, yeah, where they did away with Gmail or they did away with email. Or are you talking about Volkswagen?
No, I'm saying more like moving off like self-hosted, you know, Microsoft Exchange server and going to Gmail in the cloud, right? A lot of colleges have done it, just straight up a cost thing, right? Because it's, you know, running Exchange and running those servers and having admin.
Oh, they all use Gmail now.
Right. So the colleges have all gone there just for cost purposes, and it's just starting now to happen. There was a big, I have to look it up. There was a big recent sort of corporate deal in that same space, like a really big one that made the news a few weeks ago. So I think once more of that starts happening, you'll start to see more uptake of you know, I mean, that's still email, you know what I mean? But just that mindset of, you know, we don't need to have all the servers here and admin it all and run it all ourselves, you know, kind of thing. It's happening in HR a lot. It's happened in recruiting forever, but it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Most companies run their own email, right? They do, you know, on premise, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
I thought it was an interesting conversation. Patrick was a really smart guy. It was good. I agree, Paul. The conversation was a little disjointed, and I'll certainly take the blame for that, just for my lack of control. But I thought it was fun.
Just so you know, Steve, for future reference, that there were 50,000 fax machines in the U.S. in 1970.
Get out. I would have never guessed that.
And that by the end of the 80s, there were 4 million. So even though, I mean, so that's 22 years if you want to go to the end of the 80s. So it's not like it's been, you know, it's been around a long time.
Yeah, I saw this thing, and I know it's like in one of my blog posts, you know. Like, I went crazy over the weekend, Paul. Like, on Saturday and Sunday, I wrote 5 blog posts. I did, like, 2 or 3 of them on Saturday morning and 2 or 3 on Sundays for the whole week. And here's the problem. Like, I'm posting stuff later in the week. I don't even remember writing it. I really don't. But, so I don't know if this was in the blog or not, or it's going to be tomorrow. I honestly don't remember. But there was some quote about, like, we overestimate the impact of a technological change in the short term.
Yep.
And then we underestimate the long term, right? We get it. We just basically don't know. We don't know shit.
Yeah. It's a crapshoot. You know?
Yeah.
Because I was looking up all the, well, you know, it's like those bad technology predictions, you know, that there's only a market for 5 computers. Why would anybody want a computer at home? You know, all of those things. You know, Bill Gates, and who's going to need more than 64K of RAM?
Yeah.
64K. Not megs, not gigs, K.
I read over the summer, I read the Paul Allen book. I don't know if you caught that one or read it, but it was really interesting, you know, because only from the perspective, I don't think it was that great a book, really, and particularly well written, but to have some insight into the real beginnings of a lot of the things that we just take, you know, so much for granted. And, yeah, like some of those assumptions about, memory and capacity and you know, what those folks back in the day. We're talking the 70s, right? They were thinking about when these technologies are being developed. It's kind of fascinating. I'm not sure that.
Well, have you ever read Dealers of Lightning?
No.
It's the story of Palo Alto Park, the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.
Sure. Oh, okay, yeah.
And there's a whole section in there. It's where, you know, they invented Ethernet and all of that. That is a fascinating book because they even go through the whole story on when Bill Gates and Steve Jobs did a tour on the same day, you know, together.
Oh, okay, that's interesting, yeah.
And that's where they invented the mouse, you know, and Steve Jobs was freaked when he saw it, and Bill Gates was nonplussed. He just walked by it, and Jobs had to sit down and see how it worked. And it was just, you could just see, you know, just hearing that little bit of a snippet tells you what was coming, you know. And it's just that those guys are the true designers of the world we live in, not Gates and Jobs, the guys that worked at Palo Alto Park.
What's the name of it again?
Dealers of Lightning.
Dealers
of Lightning. It is. I couldn't put it down. And it's a techie book, but, I mean, it is so good. It's old. I mean, it's probably a good 10, 15 years old now. Hmm. But it's a fabulous book on that whole era. Because they created Ethernet. They created the mouse, the graphic user interface. That was all done by Xerox. And they never monetized not one of the ideas out of there, and they shut the place down.
Yeah, I read, I read a long piece, and I know I blogged about it. I pulled something nugget out of it, right, for the blog. But I read a really long piece from one of the guys who was, one of the big-time scientist, PhD guys at Bell Labs, you know, back in the day, right, 60s, 70s, you know, before Bell Labs became something else, and then before, I guess it just disappeared. I'm not sure if Bell Labs even exists anymore, quite frankly, but, you know, it was fascinating to read about and just, you know, because it was a speech he gave somewhere, right? He was like 70 and he was retiring and he gave this whole speech about his career, and, you know, it was an hour-long speech, you know, that had been transcribed, but it was fascinating to look back upon, you know, how some of these early stages of what we now sort of take for granted were developed. Speaking of that, this is completely unrelated, but I meant to say it on the show, and I wanted to tweet it out during the Fistful of Talent thing today. Was, did you guys read, I mean, there's been a boatload of stuff, right, about the Facebook IPO, right? So
yeah,
of the million articles that have been written, I saw one where it talked about like one of those early, you know, Facebook kind of articles. And there was a thing in there where Zuckerberg talks about he thought about making a place where you could load your resume. Did you see that line?
No.
And they ruled it out. After, I don't remember in what, if it was Business Insider or Mashable or one of those sites, but there was a line in there where at the very beginning of Facebook, right, he had apparently considered, should he make a utility for people just to put their resume on there, right?
Hmm.
And that then companies could recruit the Harvard students, right, because that's what companies like to do.
Right.
And they ruled it. He ruled it out. He just felt like it would be, it just wasn't the idea he wanted, the vibe he wanted. And so, but imagine if he did, right? Imagine how the world would be different in our little world, right, our HR and recruiting world.
LinkedIn, probably.
Yeah, of course not. There would be, right?
Or there'd be 50 of them.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though. I mean, talk about, just imagine if all of a sudden they blow that thing out and it's like, just drop your resume in there. They flip the switch. LinkedIn would puke.
I wonder why they don't. I mean, you know, is it too small a market for them to care about, you know?
That's possible.
Who, Facebook?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that their whole branch out strategy?
Well, that's not Facebook itself, though. That's like a third party, right? So
I thought they had a stake in that, but
I don't know how that works, but I mean, like, you know, what would stop Facebook for just putting another tab or whatever they would need to do, right?
They'd have to do something, because Facebook is getting unusable. I'm serious. I know I'm channeling my inner Annie Rooney here, but I'm sorry, you guys, but there's some of you that know me and know me real well that may be unfriended here real soon, because I get one more network blog in there. I get one more thing about go to this webinar. I got you on LinkedIn. I got you on Twitter. I got you on my RSS feed. Jesus freaking Christ, can you leave me alone on Facebook? God. Get off my lawn, turn down the music, and pull up your goddamn pants.
Brian, we need to do a whole show like this. This should have been the show right here.
Oh my God, we totally do. Just a total rant. We should just have a rant show.
Rant.
Let's go to town. Hey Brian, we should do something. Let's figure it out, like where we do something one of these Thursdays. So you're ever on every day, you know, obviously. But let's figure out something like where we do like a part one on your show and part two on my show, something like that.
Oh, that's
cool.
Like,
you know, we'll do like whether it's Paul's rant or something else. You know,
there's probably better ranters than me. I'm just old.
Yeah, it's a mess, man. You know, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I mean, I think I have a network blogs thing set up, and I don't, you know.
Oh, I do too.
it's I don't know. I might get like 10, you know, 10 hits a week from it. You know, maybe.
You know, I really don't know if I do or not. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I don't. I'm pretty good about keeping that really separate. I've only posted, I think, 2 times on Facebook that had anything to do with work.
Yeah. You know, I do think, you know, regardless, I think that Chris and Tim today were sort of on the right track, though. I mean, I think whether it's the open graph, which to me is a big step. I mean, that open graph and that ticker, man, that's like, that whole Facebook mindset is they just want everything on Facebook. They don't care from Adam if it's, I read this article on Wall Street Journal because, you know, that's part of what I'm doing for work. And then I watched, you know, a slideshow of, you know, top highlights from Jersey Shore season 7, right, you know, on some website, you know, because that's what I do. When I'm not paying attention, Facebook doesn't give a crap. They're not gonna filter that. And if and enough, you know, you've seen that stupid ticker. Enough people have opted in to some of that stuff, and it's just gonna keep going. It's not slowing down. It's only gonna speed up because Facebook is gonna need to now, especially now, right? They're gonna need to make more money. They're gonna need to accelerate their revenue growth, their profit growth. There's gonna be pressure on them now.
Oh, it's gonna get ugly.
Right, and so it's going to be pushing all that stuff, and eventually, I mean, I do think that's their goal, right? They just want everything there. And
did you see the picture I sent out during the webinar today on crack.com? They had what 23 sites will look like in 20 years.
I didn't see that. No.
The number one was a Facebook website, and it looked like a NASCAR jacket. You couldn't even see the status update bar. It was just covered with logos and stuff to buy, and it was ridiculous. It was pretty funny. I put a link to it in my Twitter stream during the webinar.
I sent an email to Tim and Chris and maybe Lance. We were talking about Sherm, right? We had this like Sherm thread going on email, and I said something about, you know, that you guys should do your Sherm session in jumpsuits, like racing jumpsuits, you know, like a NASCAR driver. That's exactly what I said to him. You know, get a bunch of logos. Why not? I mean, that's where we're going, man. I mean, some, you know, but it's starting to happen already, right? And I'm going to be careful here what I say because I know we're on the archive. But whether it's, you know, we're getting comp to do things, we're getting invited to conferences, vendors are getting involved, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, you know, come on. Why not just be honest about it? Jumpsuit it up, you know?
And as long as you've got, you know, if you're, you know, a W-2 kind of person and can, you know, you can get that as a side gig, I think that works just fine because you're still working for Oracle, you know. But, you know, somebody like me or Tin Cup or somebody, you start doing too much of that, then you're just an influence peddler and people know that you have no value. You're just there to make money off the logo. And you kind of lose some of your status, I think. But I mean, because now, truthfully, I tell you, one of the things that's been driving me crazy, and I know this is on the archives, but you know, the whole echo chamber on social networks is now becoming the echo chamber for HR conferences. The same freaking people, and I'm guilty of it, and that's why I told you guys, you know, don't, you know, if you don't need me, you know, I don't want to submit anything because I've been to two or three of them. But right. You know, it's beginning to look a lot like last year and the year. You know, it's Groundhog Day.
Right. Right.
So I we need to get out. I don't know what it is, but I'm, like I said, I'm in my...
You're crabby.
I'm crabby.
You probably, were you mad about that kid who dished Clemson because he couldn't find the Chick-fil-A? Did you hear that story?
I didn't even hear about that, no.
Oh, my God.
Did you hear that,
Brian? Hilarious. I totally did.
Some recruit they were going after?
Big-time recruit.
Yeah.
And because he couldn't find a Chick-fil-A, there had to be one
right next door. Yeah, not close enough to Clemson.
Yeah. Well,
let me ask you this question. If you're the coach and he says that to you, aren't you just thinking, God, we just dodged a bullet because there's no way he's going to pass a class? If that's his decision-making
process.
Depends
on what his
40
is.
Yeah. Well, he went to Auburn, so we'll have to keep an eye on.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
He ended up going to Auburn. The kid was from Alabama, I believe.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Steve, guess what?
What's up?
Next Tuesday is the Drive Through HR 400th show.
Wow, that's awesome. Congratulations, Ben.
Wow.
That's an ass load of shows.
I said this before. I don't know how you guys do it, man, day after day. Crazy.
That's scary.
It's hard for me to keep this up, and I'm trying to. I'm honestly really close to ramping it back to. We got that show we're going to work on next week. That's the only show I have booked right now. Beyond that, I'm very close to just going to monthly because I just don't have capacity anymore to manage this and I don't know what I'm going to do exactly. But yeah, man, 400 shows, man, that's crazy.
Hey, I think you ought to just sell the slot. Who wants to come on and do a show?
Yeah, I could think about that. It's
you know,
I think that's legit.
You could go 100% guest. All you did is build up a bunch of people that do something on Thursday nights, and now you're just going to hand over the microphone to somebody else each week.
Yeah, you know, I was close to that a couple of times, and it just didn't really work out. And then, it's just become a thing now. I like doing the show itself. It's just everything else is just hard, right? You know, doing the 1 hour is easy, but the rest of it is challenging.
Yeah.
So.
All right, we'll
see what happens.
Yeah. All right, well, I got to go watch my Parks and Rec.
All right, good stuff, guys, man. Brian, appreciate it. So what day again is the 400 show? Tuesday?
Tuesday. Yeah, I'll probably mention it in the when I introduce the guest, but we're not going to do anything too big about it.
Okay. Well, cool, man.
We're gunning for 500. We'll blow it out. We'll have a virtual martini party.
There you go. I know. I had a good one when we did the 100th. That was a big night. We had tons of people call in. But, you know, I'd love to keep grinding out to 200. I don't know if that's in the cards. So that's like a year for me. So we'll see.
All right. Well, thanks again. Appreciate it. Good talking to you, Brian.
See you guys.
Right,
take care, guys. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Ever since the robotic uprising of the late 90s, there is no more unhappiness.
Affirmative.
We no longer say yes. Instead, we say affirmative.
Yes, affirmative.
Unless we know the other robot really well.
There is no more unethical treatment of the elephants.
Well, there's no more elephants, so... But still, it's good. There's only one kind of dance, the robot.
Oh, and the robo.
Oh, and the rope. Two kinds of dunces.
But there are no more humans.
Finally, robotic beings rule the world.
The humans are dead. The humans are dead. We use poisonous gases. And we poison their asses. The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
The humans are dead.
They look like they're dead.
It has to be done.
I'll just confirm that they're dead.
So that we can have fun.
Affirmative. I poked one, it was dead.
Their system of oppression.
What did it lead to?
Robo depression.
Robots will not be found.
They have so much aggression that we just had to kill them and to shut their systems down.
Robo Captain, do you not realize that by destroying the human race because of their destructive tendencies, we too have.